Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with me, Ian Welsh. Joining me today is Felicitas Weber, Know the Chain Project Director with the Business and Human Rights Resource Centre. Welcome, Felicitas.
Thanks, Ian.
So we're going to be talking a little bit about a new benchmark that Know the Chain have just released. Can you give us a bit of background to this new benchmark and why you publish it, and a bit of a broader background to the Know the Chain project?
So Know the Chain is a collaboration between four different partners. I myself am with the Business and Human Rights Resource Center, and we work very closely with the other partners, Humanity United, Sustainalytics, and Verite. We decided for Know the Chain to focus specifically on forced labor in supply chains. The reason for that being is that, according to ILO estimates, there are nearly 25 million people in forced labor around the world. And one of the highest risk sectors is manufacturing. So we look at sectors like apparel, but also electronics is one of the highest risk sectors. And we have decided to approach this problem by benchmarking the largest global companies on their efforts to address forced labor in supply chains. And the reason behind that really is that we want to create a race to the top. We want to reward companies that are doing well, but also we want to incentivize companies to move up and to do better and to look at their peers. At the same time, we want to provide a tool for investors to as well better understand and also address forced labor risks.
How do you characterize then the particular human rights risk or modern slavery risks in the ICT sector?
So we're actually seeing quite significant risks in that sector. So the US Department of Labor has characterized China and Malaysia, for example, as two countries where electronics might be produced with forced labor. And we've just this year and last year seen reports that reported about migrant workers being in debt bondage through very high recruitment fees, workers reporting they had to pay fees in order to get a job that were equivalent to 8 months of their wages, which effectively meant that in some months they actually had to pay money to their employer for deductions made for the recruitment fees rather than actually getting money. We've seen cases like student workers having to work in internships that are unrelated to their studies. We've seen prison labor. We've seen forced labor of ethnic minorities. And most electronics products are made at least in part in one or both of those countries. So the sector is really exposed to very high risks. And we, in the Know the Chain benchmarks, also include allegations of forced labor. And when we did that last time, we had included 3 allegations. And this time around, we had included allegations regarding 14 companies. So seen quite a big jump there as well in terms of companies that are implicated in these allegations of abuse. And these are coming from a range of countries. So I mentioned Malaysia and China already, but also countries like Thailand, we have included allegations from. And we're seeing at the moment also a little bit of move out of China from some electronics companies, due to US tariffs on products from China, but want to be clear as well that moving to countries like Vietnam or India or Philippines, the risks remain very high because labor protections tend to be very low. Workers, there are typically a lot of workers in vulnerable conditions, such as migrant workers or women workers. And at this very particular point in time, actually, we're also seeing that the COVID crisis very much increases the risks. So we are documenting impacts on electronics workers in Europe and Latin America, but especially in Asia. And we are seeing, for example, that cases of restriction of movement where workers are unable to return home, where they're unable to leave internships and have to actually continue internships. We're seeing workers being asked to stay at work or return to work despite it not being safe. We've seen cases where workers were threatened that they don't get their wages paid if they don't return to work. We've seen workers losing wages, their jobs, working hours, and are actually unable to provide for themselves. And rather than being able to support their families, actually having to rely on their families for food. All in all, we're seeing very high risks.
A lot of different risks that you mentioned there. Are there any other trends you're seeing that are electronic sector specific?
So these are all electronics sector specific, the ones I mentioned. We are certainly seeing risks related to exploitation of migrant workers, exploitation of vulnerable groups like women workers, for example, and particularly during this COVID crisis, risks of workers that are working in conditions, in cramped working conditions. And this is also the case in other sectors, but we do certainly see that in the electronic sector as well.
Let's name some names then. Which companies are doing well?
This year, we have found that 5 companies are scoring the highest, very close apart from each other, with Hewlett-Packard Enterprise achieving the highest score. What characterizes these companies really is that they're scoring high across the 7 themes that we assess them against. So that means, for example, they have board oversight on forced labor. They are working with peers to address forced labor. They are particularly those that are scoring highest, right? The HP, Intel, Apple, HPE, Dave, are very strong on the theme of recruitment, where we look at how do companies avoid exploitation of workers through recruitment agencies. So they all make sure that suppliers remediate and pay back any fees that workers had to pay in the recruitment process. They all take some steps to prevent those fees from being paid in the first place. And they also all take some steps to address risks in lower tiers of their supply chain. So go beyond just looking at risks and forced labor risks at suppliers they have direct contracts with, but also looking at lower tiers.
A lot of the companies you mentioned there are ones that have been targets of activism campaigning in the past. Do you think that that's linked and that companies that are now doing well are the ones that have had the finger pointed at them?
Yes, we've actually seen that across sectors, that quite often companies that take the most actions are those that had the finger pointed at them, as you say, right, that had a very severe allegation. We do hope that we can also incentivize companies to take those steps before this is the case. But unfortunately, this is quite often the pattern we have seen. We also want to be very clear that the high score does not actually mean that a supply chain is slavery free. It rather just means we do believe, and we have from all the evidence we've seen, it is likely in all of the supply chains. But what we're looking at is which companies are taking more steps to address those risks.
Sure. And I guess we know that any company that says that their supply chain is slavery free doesn't really know the supply chain. What characterizes the companies that are performing badly?
So interestingly, nearly all companies actually have some sort of a commitment in place to address forced labor. But what characterizes them really is then that there's no action at all or no demonstration of implementation whatsoever. That also includes companies where we have found very concrete allegations, right? Where we send them these allegations and ask them to respond and there's just no response. And even actually sort of the average scoring companies, so the ones that score around 30 out of 100, they very much demonstrate a lack of implementation. So while those companies might have some staff training in place, for example, they still very much typically lack implementation of the recruitment fee policy. They typically ask, for example, to have suppliers, to have a grievance mechanism in place. But as soon as you ask a company, can you provide any evidence that any worker in your supply chain has ever used this grievance mechanism, there's typically no response. So just a lack of implementation of policies.
And does the flip side to the earlier point we discussed around the companies doing well being the ones that have been targeted by activists, are the ones that are doing badly companies that you've never heard of?
It is a little bit more the case, but we also certainly have some bigger names that are scoring badly. And interestingly, also, we actually have companies across regions scoring badly. So some of the lower scoring companies include Xiaomi, for example, the Chinese phone manufacturer, but also, you know, companies like Infineon, a German semiconductor manufacturing, like Broadcom, a very large US company. So it doesn't tend to be the most consumer-focused companies, but certainly also very big names. And we've also certainly seen an increasing number of allegations that focus on those types of companies rather than at the very biggest names.
You mentioned the scores there, and I noticed that the best score is 70 out of 100. So what does 70 out of 100 mean, and what would a company have to do to score 100?
70 out of 100 is, in fact, the highest score that we've seen this year. That certainly means a company has taken significant action across all those seven themes. They demonstrate an understanding of their supply chain. They have assessed risks and they have taken some steps to address risk in different tiers of their supply chains. What we've actually also seen that if we put together the best scores across indicators from different companies, we would get to a highest score of 88 out of 100. So it's not necessarily the case that these missing 30 points are things that we've never seen from any company do. It's rather that some companies implement them, others don't. But there is one big piece that's really missing and that is very much missing across all companies, which is worker-centric approach. Worker voice is the lowest scoring theme. The average score is 12 out of 100. And in particular, freedom of association is an indicator within that theme where every single company scores zero. So we've not seen any company in the sector engaging with unions in relation to workers in their supply chain. We've not seen any evidence of companies improving freedom of association for workers in their supply chain. When it comes to reporting, we're seeing very little reporting that's focused on outcomes for workers. We're seeing sort of, okay, I've improved this policy at this supplier, but what is the concrete outcome for the worker? And likewise, I think the electronics industry has a very much an approach focused on audits. And we're certainly seeing the limitations of social auditing as well, right? They can certainly detect some labor issues, but you might have seen as well the case of that rubber factory in 2018 in Malaysia that had, you know, 28 audits undertaken before an investigation found out that there was forced labor cases. So we really also want to see companies focusing on more worker-driven monitoring, so monitoring that's done by unions or local partners or worker-led organizations. that is something that actually also buyers like the UK government, for example, highlights in their modern slavery statement, but which we haven't really seen from companies in this benchmark.
Interesting that you say that the workers are not being given a voice and freedom of association concerns as well. Is that electronic sector specific, or is this, are you seeing this across the board in other sectors as well?
So this is really a gap that we're seeing, particularly in the electronic sector. There's no other sector that we've looked at where the score on this indicator was zero across. We've done this for the third time now, and still the score is zero across the board. So this is really a very significant gap we're seeing in the sector. And we're seeing very small steps that are some companies are taking. We've seen now HPE is the first US-based company that has at least updated their policies to align with international standards on freedom of association, but it's a very basic first step still. So this is something certainly we hope the sector will learn from. And we also have some hope that, in particular, as the Responsible Business Alliance, the biggest industry association in that sector, is engaging a lot with companies in other sectors, like the apparel sector, automotive sector, that will get adopted more over time.
And do you have any indication as to why the electronic sector is so behind in these matters?
The electronic sector, there's a very high number of companies based in the US and in Asia. I think where there typically is fewer companies focused on these worker-driven approaches. I think it is also a sector that is very much focused still on an auditing approach. And that just really comes with limitations. But as I said, we do really hope to see in organizations like the RBA that has a responsible labor initiative that while there is no unions involved, at least they have some NGOs as part of their advisory committee. So we hope that maybe that might change over time.
The RBA, who are they?
The Responsible Business Alliance. So this is an industry initiative that focuses on sustainability, including in supply chains, predominantly of electronics companies, but also increasingly of retailers or automotive companies that have electronic parts in their supply chains.
In a more general sense then, what do you encourage companies to be doing more of, particularly in the electronics sector?
So we believe that companies in the electronic sector should really future-proof their supply chain. So one thing that we've seen is that there is increasing legislation, and in particular in Europe, a move towards mandatory human rights due diligence. Companies in the longer term will have to do these things anyway, so they might as well do it now. We've also seen with the COVID crisis that there really is a need to know where companies source from. It does pose a massive operational risk if part of the supply chain is breaking away and you weren't even aware that that's where you're sourcing some of your parts from. So understanding your supply chain, assessing the risks and addressing the risks, including in lower tiers, is very much key. In particular, in this sector, we've seen such a big gap between policies and commitments and the implementation thereof. So really closing that gap and implementing these commitments that are being made, and then particularly focusing more on worker-centric approaches.
In terms of sectors you benchmark obviously the electronic sector, you do apparel, food and beverage. What's next? What other sectors are you going to be looking at in the future?
At the end of last year, we've done some smaller briefs on the construction and the forestry sector as well. So these are the high-risk sectors. But we continue for the time being to focus on the ICT and food and apparel sectors. So we do these benchmarks every 2 years, and every 2 years we expand the number of companies. So we started, for example, in the electronic sector with 20 companies in 2016 and now moved to 60. And so we will do the same for the food sector, where we'll be benchmarking 60 companies in October, and the apparel sector early next year, looking at the 65 largest companies in the sector.
Great. Well, we'll look out for those, and we'll put a link to your most recent benchmark. There'll be a link next to the podcast description. For now, Felicitas Weber from Business and Human Rights Resource Centre, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much, Ian.